6. Repulse. They have seen what's coming, and they prepare to meet it. War slides armies across the field and into conjunction, like playing pieces, to clash and compete, as though it is all some heartless, preordained game. Near Hasgard Gate, just short of the Delphic Battery's southern front, Fafnir Ran prepares to meet the enemy's next move. Archimus has positioned Ran there, for Archimus is a grand master of war's merciless game. Ran takes his place under the broken arches of the Delphine Viaduct, its proud spans demolished by engine fire. Petrocarbonic smoke, luxuriant as velvet and as toxic as reactor dust, floods the street basin like a living thing, racing ahead of the advancing traitor line. Archimus has just been named Lord Militant Terror. Signals are torn and patchy, and Ran is not sure of the significance of this. It suggests the chain of authority is somehow broken, or that hegemon control has devolved leadership to the field. It suggests Great Sigismund is dead, or occupied with other vital work. It suggests the Praetorian, Dawn, is not able or available to lead the fight, which in turn suggests that the Lord Angel and mighty Valdor are also somehow gone. Ran puts such doubts and fears from his mind. He assumes, for he is no fool, that some significant counterstrike is being planned, or is already underway, a counterstrike that occupies the Emperor's three greatest champions. He hopes desperately for its success. He feels no resentment that he cannot be part of it. The line must be held, and it is down to those remaining outside the sealed gate, men like him and Archimus, Amory and Ascalon, to do that work. They have been fighting relentlessly, without break or pause, for at least 12 hours, though Ran's Kron system has become defective, and he is unable to track combat time precisely. It feels like months, longer than the rest of the siege combined. Archimus has been calm and masterful since his authority was announced and authenticated. There is more than a hint of Dawn in him. His deep voice speaks to them over the crackling voxcast, grim and exact, moving units like ivory markers on a regicide board. Archimus is in the thick of it too, somewhere close by the mayhem, fighting hand to hand as he runs the game in his head. Archimus chose to stay outside when Eternity slammed. Ran knows the old Huskarl well. He can't help but feel there is an incongruous note of delight in Archimus's commands. They are on the last stroke before midnight, in the belly of hell, but Archimus rejoices in the combat, freed from his desk station at Bab to join the fight. Even if it is simply to die with dignity, blade in hand. It is his right, and Ran won't deny him. Ran expects the same right himself. He cannot see a way they can prevail now, for too much has been lost, and the enemy is far too great. But they can serve as they were born to serve, holding fate back for as long as they can, and requiring the very highest price for their lives. Archimus has sent Ran's units forward along the causeway below the viaduct, with a force of White Scars under Namahi, master of the Keshig, to their left on the Via Atmosine. Ran can hear White Scars' jet bikes and the chatter of their bolters through the billowing smog. Blood Angels, 4 squads at least, are reported as closing on his right, but there's no sign of them. Relays report a surge of World Eaters pouring in from Hasgard along the viaduct approach. Ran spreads his formations wide, making up in coverage what he sacrifices in line density. His approach to warfare has always been more fluid than Archimus's, less strict or formal. He knows this is why Archimus was elected to field command over him. Archimus has superior strategic experience, while Ran can do his best work at the cutting edge of the fight. Archimus expects this fluidity from him. He has directed the Lord Seneschal, but not specified any formal notions of deployment or fighting structure. He would not presume to do so, no more than Ran would presume to question Archimus's grasp of the battle space dynamic. When they come, the World Eaters are not alone. It is more a rabble, a disjointed, incoherent mass of traitor Astartes and warriors of the Dark Mechanicum, jostling together as they charge down the causeway towards the Via Atmosine. They are manic, unchecked and raving, drunk on the ecstasy of slaughter and the infernal forces that compel them. Many are indeed world-eaters, now rage-blind, their bolters long since discarded in favour of blades and tearing hands. Some still wear the Caedare Remissum crests of their kind, and bark blasphemies in the Nagrakali argo. Most are barely recognisable as Astartes. They are grotesquely swollen and distorted, reshaped by the warp into lumbering, ogre-like forms that bound and gallop down the rock-crete on all fours like giant apes. Their necks and shoulders are thick and hunched, like those of fighting bulls or boars. They squeal and bawl, their snouts and toad mouths and other transmuted features bristling with tusks and horns and saw-edged fangs. Among them, the soot-caked skeletal figures of gun servitors, some stilted and preposterously tall, some multi-limbed, some hunchbacked with heavy power cells or tanks for flamer weapons. Some ride artillery carriages mounted with swivel guns or pots de feu, or crew ornate self-propelled Zamborak fitted with autocannons and fusion sakers. Ran sees Death Guard too, ponderous and abdominous, leaking liquid pus from the seams of their distended plate. And Sons of Horus, fleeting, howling, crested shadows of wrath. But many are undefinable. Astartes so disfigured, it is impossible to determine their origin legion. They are caked in mud and gore, or transmuted into inhuman, neverborn shapes, or have covered their plate with garish colours and obscene symbols that sear the mind if the eye lingers on them too long. They are an onrushing wall of depravity. Ran Sensoria render the tagmarker icons of most as degraded, pixelating smudges. A few markers remain legible, and Ran's skin crawls to see the names of old once brothers and fine comrades appending such monstrosities.
"Line hold!"
he roars on the company channel. Affirmation runes light up on the sidebar of his visor. In a day of the most ferocious warfare he has ever known, this is going to be an entirely new level of savagery. He marvels at the mettle and capacity of his brother Praetorian Imperial fists, and the White Scars and Blood Angels too. They have all fought at exemplary levels in their lives, never found wanting. But on this last day of days, they have drawn on new reserves of speed and skill and fury. The level of violence required in this last stand makes every other war pale into insignificance and seem like a trifle. It is as though they have never really fought at all until this hour. His fire teams open up from behind planted shields. Leold Baldwin's heavy weapons group pumps cannon fire and bulk las at the approaching tide. The squads commanded by Tarkos, Devalin, and Halen rip off bolter shots. Rand's standing order was single shot to preserve ammunition stocks, but just as Arcamus defers contact applications to Ran, so he defers to his warriors. They are men of experience. All have selected rapid fire because they know that in such a target-rich environment, no round will be wasted, and they need to smash the momentum out of the enemy mass before it reaches them. The raging blitz of fire lights up the smoke and bathes the causeway in a flickering brilliance, and even underlights the broken arches of the viaduct above them. The front rank of the enemy bulk is chewed apart, then the rank behind, then the third, until those that follow are either shot apart or brought down by the corpses piling up in their path. Baldwin's cannon fire strikes a spidering Zamborak, and it detonates in a wild globe of light that blows a smoking, burning hole in the enemy's ranks 20 meters in diameter. Everything caught within it is vaporized. Bolter fire from Halen's squad slays some bestial neverborn devil, 4 meters tall and horned like a ram, that comes clambering and scything through the mob, maiming its own followers in a paroxysm of desperation to reach its prey. The diamantine-tipped mass reactive shells stop it in a series of shuddering impacts, pummeling it, riddling it in showers of blood and meat, and finally disarticulating it entirely. But the tide cannot be dammed. The enemy stampedes on, clambering and scrambling across its own dead and dying, like some conveyor system in a manufactory that blindly rolls product into product, even though the line is jammed. Ran knew as much, even before his squads began their barrage. He has already formed his melee squads between the spaced-out blazing fire teams. The skirmishers, mostly Imperial Fists, but with some worthy White Scars among them, are either men like Ran, who specialize in the brute action of hand-to-hand, or warriors who have lost their bolters or expended their munitions in previous actions. Most have been given storm shields. They draw up in hastate formations, angled like ice plows with their tips towards the enemy, the flaring lines of each V dressed with overlap shields. Chain blades rev, power blades ignite. As the mass reaches them, the formations drive forward, punching into the approaching line like broad spears. Ran, an axe in each hand, is at the tip of one V. The impact is an instant, jarring concussion of plasteel and ceramite. As the melee squads drive in, raking like a serrated blade into the enemy line and breaking its integrity like a fork turning soil, the fire teams disengage, fluidly reforming into smaller Vs to plug the gaps between the teeth of Ran's formations. They dig in, bearing the pressure of the foe weight against them. Unity will not hold for long, but while it does, the hastate formations broaden out, turning narrow spikes into makeshift shield walls that open like wings. From there, it becomes incoherent, a whirling maelstrom of fury, a blur. Ran is in the very thick of it, orientated only by the shield-bearers at his left and right. His furious axe blows overlap, hacking with mechanical repetition. The air fogs with blood vapour and fills with hammer scale and spinning chips of ceramite. The din of armour striking armour and weapon striking armour and weapon striking shields becomes one endless grinding shriek, utterly deafening, a numbing metal torrent that reminds Ran of the ceaseless noise in the hammering rooms of the House of Weapons. Ran has no idea what he is destroying. Every shape and movement in front of him is a target. His visor overloads with baffling data, unable to code and represent the mayhem fast enough. He knows his line will break at any moment. He can feel it buckling and stretching, losing cohesion as wave after wave of traitor bodies crashes into it. He is standing on bodies, climbing up the mound of dead that his men are making. And too many of the dead are his own men.